Okay. Tishya hari avsara bhagavataha ado bhuvo. Baro apitina tava janmani stutaha. Tista kirtan tat padakya sus veneer. Dakshama gam dayam cha tava nu kampititam. Tista harya svarano bhuvo. Tista harya svarano bhavako bhuvo. Varo naspati tarvo naspati tito. Disyam chudavana sasaso. Sumra Dakshayam Gamajara Dham Samhara Bhavapubo Varyana Pasati Bhavapubo Dista kirtam pradino susubo. Dakshanam kamarati. Translation. O Lord, we are fortunate because the heavy burden of the demons upon the earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Indeed, we are certainly fortunate, for we shall be able to see upon this earth and in the heavenly planets the mark of the lotus, the conch shell, the club, the disc, and the disc that adorn your lotus feet. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The soles of the Lord's lotus feet are marked with Sankhya, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. Conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, and also by the flag and a thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on this earth or in the heavenly planets, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavan Dham is the transcendental place because Krishna walking on this land frequently. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were fortunate to see these marks here and there. When Akura went to Vrindavan to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, upon seeing the marks of his lotus feet on the grounds of Vrindavan, he fell and began to groan. These marks are visible to devotees who receive the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tavan Nip Kap. The demigods were jubilant not only because the appearance of the Supreme Lord would do away with the burdensome demons, but because they would be able to see upon the ground the transcendental marks of the soles of the Lord's lotus feet. The gopis always thought of the lotus feet, and when he was walking in the pasturing grounds, and as described in the previous verse, simply by thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord, the Lord's lotus feet, the gopis were fully absorbed in transcendence. Avista Sheta Na Bhagavata Kalpate. But like the gopis, one who was always absorbed in the thought of the Lord beyond the material platform will not remain in this material world. It is the duty, therefore, we always hear, chant, and think of the Lord's lotus feet, as actually done by the Vaishnavas, who have decided to live in Vrindavan and always think of the Lord's lotus feet 24 hours a day. It refers in this purport of the previous verse, which we did yesterday, but I'll read that verse just so it keeps us in context of what verse we're dealing with today. So the verse 37, even while engaged in various activities, devotees whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet and who constantly hear, chant, contemplate, and cause others to remember the transcendental names and forms are always on the transcendental platform. Thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I did a little rehearsing for this, but some devotees gave me some sites from various scriptures on the Lord's lotus feet, and in regards to the purport, there's a chapter, I believe it's number 37 in the Krishna book that you might want to go to. It says, when Akura went to Vrindavan to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, upon seeing the marks of the Lord's lotus feet on the ground of Vrindavan, he fell and began to groan. So, this refers to this chapter 36 of the Krishna book. Kamsa sends Akura for Krishna to bring him from Vrindavan to Mathura to kill him. And this is kind of a short chapter in the Krishna book, but it's Kamsa. He's requesting Akura to bring the two boys. Here, I'll read the one paragraph. I request you to go immediately to Vrindavan and find the two boys named Krishna and Balaram. They are the son of Nanda Maharaj. Take this nice chariot, especially prepared for the boys, and bring them immediately. This is my request to you. Now, my plan is to kill these two boys. As soon as they come to the gate, there will be a giant elephant named Kuvalayapida waiting, and possibly he will kill them. But if somehow or other they escape, they will meet the wrestlers, and they will be killed by them. This is my plan. After killing these two boys, I shall kill Vyasadev and Nanda, who are supporters of the Vishnu and Bhoja dynasty. I shall kill my father, Ugrasena, and his brother, Devika, because they are actually my enemies and hindrance to my diplomacy and politics. Now I shall get rid of my enemies. Jarasandha is my father-in-law, and I have a great monkey named Dravida. With their help, it will be easy to kill all the kings on the surface of the earth with the support of the demigods. This is my plan. In this way, I shall be free of all opposition, and it will be very pleasant to rule the world without obstruction. You may know so that Shambhara, Narakasura, and Banasura are my intimate friends. And when I begin this war against the kings who support the demigods, they will help me considerably. Surely I will be rid of all my enemies. Please go to Vrindavan and encourage the boys to come to see the beauty of Mathura and take pleasure in the wrestling competition. Last paragraph. After hearing the plan of Kamsa, Akura replied, "My dear king, your plan is very excellently made to counteract the hindrance of your diplomatic activities. But you should maintain equilibrium, for the result of your activities may be fruitful or may not be fruitful. After all, man proposes and God disposes. We may make great plans, but unless they are sanctioned by the supreme authority, they will fail. Everyone in this material world knows that the supernatural power and the ultimate disposer of everything. One may make very great plan with his fertile brain, but he must know that he will be subject to the fruits and miseries, the fruit, misery, and happiness. But I have nothing to say against your proposal. As a friend, I shall carry out your order and bring Krishna and Balaram as you desire." After instructing his friends in various ways, Kamsa retired and Akura went back to his home. So that's kind of discloses Kamsa's, you know, he's has these intentions that are, you know, just define his character. And as they say, after all, man proposes and God disposes. But I think in the later on that these two wrestlers were killed. So that's another story. That's chapter 37 of the Krishna book. But in regards to this verse, it says, he says, the Lord showed his lotus. See, people. Instead of looking at the lotus feet of the lotus face, the Lord, the devotees are asked to look at the lotus feet first. And it says here, Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 8, verse 26. He says the Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service. From all material contamination, such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental says, from this, the toenails and fingernails appeared to be like petals of a flower. And then in the third canto, chapter 9, verse 5, O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet carried by the air of the Vedic sound through the holes of their ears accept devotional service. For them you are never separated from the lotus feet of from the lotus of their hearts. The devotees are satisfied with being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord and have no ambition to see his beautiful face or aspire for protection of the strong arms of the Lord. There was this devotee that gave me these verses and, you know, asked me to relate them to you, because I didn't really have a whole lot of time to dwell on this, but they did the homework for me. So it says that the lotus feet are the source, they are the source of everything. The lotus feet of the Lord are known as Mahat Padam. This means that the total source of material existence rests on the lotus feet of the Lord. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, everything is emanating from him. This cosmic manifestation, which is compared to an ocean of nescience, is resting on the lotus feet of the Lord. As such, this great ocean of nescience is minimized by a person who is a pure devotee. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord need not cross over the ocean, for he has already crossed over it by virtue of his position, position at the lotus feet of the Lord. At this time, would anybody want to add anything about the lotus feet, or just, should I just continue and relate a few more verses that could say it much better than I could? Here's another one. It says, no need to visit any holy place. Lord Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is described here as Tirthapad. Tirtha means sanctified place, and pad means the lotus feet of the Lord. People go to the sanctified place to free themselves from all sinful reactions. In other words, those who are devoted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, automatically become sanctified. The Lord's lotus feet are called Tirthapad because under their protection there are hundreds and thousands of saintly persons who sanctify this sacred places of pilgrimage. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, a great acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, advised us not to travel to different places of pilgrimage. Undoubtedly, it is troublesome to go from one place to another. But one who is intelligent can take shelter of the lotus feet of Govinda and thereby automatically sanctified as a result of his pilgrimage. Anyone who is fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Govinda is called Tirthapad. He does not need to travel on various pilgrimage, for he can enjoy all the benefits simply by engaging in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. I remember Srila Prabhupada saying that devotees would be going to all these different temples in Vrindavan, but I think Prabhupada encouraged them to stay at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, you know. But I don't know if you devotees have heard that before. Have you ever heard that before? This was compiled by a devotee named Giriraj Das. I guess he's a resident of Vrindavan. And he goes on to say, even Krishna wants to taste his own toes. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. Oh my Lord, how is this possible for the Supreme One? One who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation. The answer is that it is possible for the end of the millennium. You lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just like a small baby, you lick the toe of your lotus feet. At the dissolution, the Lord sometimes appears as a small baby lying on a banyan tree, floating on the devastating water. Therefore, Devahuti suggests, you're lying down within the abdomen of a common woman like me is not so astonishing. You can lie down on the leaf of a banyan tree and float on the waters of devastation as a small baby. Therefore, it is not very wonderful that you can lie down in the abdomen of my body. You teach us and those who are very fond of children within this material world, who therefore enter into marriage to enjoy family life with children, can also have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their child. And most wonderful thing is that the Lord licks his toe. Since all the great sages and devotees apply all their energy and activities in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there must be some kind of transcendental pleasure in the toes of the lotus feet. The Lord licks his, licks his toe to taste the nectar for which the devotees always aspire. Sometimes the personality of Godhead wonders how much transcendental pleasure is within himself in order to taste his own potency. He sometimes takes the position of tasting the Lord himself. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, but he appears as a devotee to taste the sweetness of the transcendental mellows, which is tasted by Srimati Radharani and the greatest of all devotees. I remember I was in Toronto, and that was we had a candle factory there, and we had about 13 devotees from here, and they went to Toronto and to work in the candle factory, and then as it got closer to Christmas, they would go to various malls and sell the candles. And there was a devotee there, and our temple president, and another devotee, and they washed his feet. And then I was kind of a new devotee, and I was kind of taken back because they washed his feet, and then he drank the water. And I thought that was not such a Western thing to do. So it kind of left me a little perplexed. But I guess that could be expected for a Western person. I don't know. Those devotees are still with us, though. You know, so they're still engaged in Christian service, so I guess there's some benefit. We have just a few more things that are about Krishna's lotus feet. So, ecstasy simply by meditation on Krishna's lotus feet. There is such transcendental bliss in simply meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord that one can forget everything but the Lord's transcendental form. The soles of the Lord's lotus feet are marked with the conch shell, the disc, the club, and the lotus, and also by the flag of the thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on the earth or in the heavenly planet, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavan Dham is a transcendental place because Krishna is walking on this land frequently. That was part of our purport. Krishna's lotus feet should be our first priority. When a devotee wants to see the transcendental form of the Lord, he begins his meditation on the Lord's body by first looking at the feet of the Lord. One should begin to see the Lord from his lotus feet, gradually rising to his thighs, his waist, his chest, his feet, his waist, chest, and face. One should not try to look at the face of the Lord without being accustomed to seeing the lotus feet of the Lord. By his constitutional position, Lord Shiva is always great and auspicious, since he has accepted on his head the Ganges water which emanated from the lotus feet of the Lord. And he has become even more auspicious and important. The stress is on the lotus feet of the Lord. A relationship with the lotus feet of the Lord can even enhance the importance of Lord Shiva, what to speak of other ordinary living beings. In the last page of these is the unsurpassed beauty of Krishna. The beauty of the lotus feet of the Lord is compared to the petals of the lotus flower, which grow in the autumn season. By nature's law, in the autumn, the dirty and muddy waters of the river and lakes become very clean. At that time, the lotus flowers growing in the lake appear very bright and beautiful. The lotus flower itself is compared to the lotus feet of the Lord, and the petals are compared to the nails of the feet of the Lord. Why are they called the lotus feet? The spiritual planet Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal abode of Lord Krishna, is shaped like a whorl of a lotus flower. Even when the Lord descends to one of the mundane planets, he does so by manifesting his own abode as it is. Thus his feet remain always on the same big whorl of the lotus flower. His feet are as beautiful as the lotus flower. Therefore, it is said that Lord Krishna has lotus feet. Now, I believe in Mayapur there's the nine petals. Is it the nine petals of the Dham there? So that's in relation to that. And the last one is the pure devotees are attached to the lotus feet. Pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus has a kind of honey which is transcendentally relished by devotees. They are like bees who are always after the honey. Srila Rupa Goswami, the great devotee acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, sung about the lotus honey, comparing himself to a bee. O my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly, therefore, give me bee mind, a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources of all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not even see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditations for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are the very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know that I have no genuine devotion for your lotus feet, but because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom. Therefore, I am such attracted to you. O Supreme Eternal, please therefore be kind upon me. Lucky somebody was able to get this information for me, because I'm a little not so familiar with the lotus feet topic. But I don't know, should I ask if there's any questions now or comments, or anybody would like to add something to this? Anything in particular? He'll get you the microphone. Hopefully it's working properly.
Thank you. Thank you for the class, Prabhuji.
Okay. Yeah.
Prabhuji, I have a question just wanted to find out about the pastimes. Like when Prabhupada's feet were washed.
Yes.
So, was there any instances we got a chance to drink that water, like you were mentioning in the comment?
Oh, what would they do with the water?
Right.
Jeez, that's
Thank
a good
you.
Question, Prabhu. I don't know. That's something I don't know. But, pardon me? Yeah, well, I've seen it done before, but I don't know what they did with the water, you know. But that's an interesting question, you know. So I guess I'll repeat the translation of the verse. O Lord, we are very fortunate because of the heavy burden of the demons upon the earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Indeed, we are certainly fortunate, for we shall be able to see upon this earth and in the heavenly planets the marks of the lotus, conch shell, club, and disc that adorn your lotus feet. And it's in regards to the first sentence of this verse, the heavy burden of the demons upon the earth. That's like Prabhupada said, in former ages, the Lord would come to kill the demons. But in this age, the demons are so cooperative, they're killing each other. And then it said in such a yuga that if somebody is sinful, then the kingdom and the king are responsible. And then it goes Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga. If somebody's a sinful person, then the reactions come up on the whole family. But in Kali Yuga, since we have devotees, a devotee-like nature and a demoniac nature in our heart, but you know, we're actually, if we have sinful desires, we're not, because the atmosphere is so surcharged with nescience, Prabhupada calls it, that we're not liable for the reaction. But if we do commit that, we are. But in previous ages, I guess just thinking of that, you know, activity, then you would get a reaction. So I always thought about that. You know, that was kind of like a due to the age we live in, it's so contaminated that, you know, you just walk outside the door and you see all kinds of abominable things. You know, I was thinking of the Lord cleaning the Gundicha temple in Jagannath Puri. I was there, and the first time I went there, there was, you know, because we were reading about that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we went to the Gundicha temple, and there was these fellas there that they were taking care of the temple, or seemingly to take care of it, but it was like pretty dirty at that time. And I guess ISKCON's been taking care of it more, and you know, because some of the temples they're not being maintained properly, so they just give them to the ISKCON organization. So when we were there, there was these guys there, and they were supposed to be taking care of the temple and, you know, watching who comes and goes, but they were drinking and smoking right in the, you know, the courtyard. And then I was thinking of cleaning the Gundicha temple. When the devotees were there with Lord Chaitanya and they were cleaning the Gundicha temple, they were trying to do this best they could, and then after that, the Lord found more dirt. And so that dirt is compared to the dirt in our heart. And I was thinking, every time I go to our parking lot and I clean that up and I find these abominable things there in the parking lot, and I'm thinking, would the devotees and Lord Chaitanya even touch these things? You know, so I kind of... I just you know, saw the degradation of Kali Yuga when I go out to our parking lot to clean it up. But and I remember devotees were in San Francisco when Prabhupada was there, and he said, Prabhupada, this is such a bad neighborhood, you know, and why would people want to come here, you know? And he said, well, by us being there, it'll become a better neighborhood. But they've moved around a number of times, but the temple in Berkeley is, I think it's been there over, when Prabhupada was there, it was there. And devotee Sarva Upamam and his wife were there for a few years, and they, you know, we have to call the police here maybe a few times a year, you know, but there they would have to call the police like, you know, like once every week or so, you know, because there's so many crazy people out there. But it says the farther west you go, the more degraded it becomes. But, and then, well, Bhakti Siddhanta wanted the temples in the most, I remember him saying he wanted the temples in the most congested parts of the city. I know in Madras, when I was there, you know, I think they moved, but you would walk out the street and there, immediately there's all kinds of bustling traffic and everything. So I was kind of reflecting upon, you know, what Bhakti Siddhanta said, because he wanted to be in the center of it all, you know. So, and I know in New York City, in the Brooklyn Temple, it's, they have to buzz you to let, they have somebody at the front desk buzzing somebody to let them in. I know that was, I was there when the towers came, just before the towers came down, and they were buzzing people in to the, let them into the temple, you know. Because surrounded by the area, there's a lot of mentally ill people. But Subal was relating some of the people that would come to the temple, and then they were later to be found out to be notorious criminals. So Kali Yuga, you know, it's. And then when we were at the airport, devotees were explaining to Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, we hand out so many books here, but we would buy back books that were thrown in the garbage. You know, we'd give the workers or whoever found them like 10%, and then we would resell them if they were, we could sell them. If we couldn't, then we would take them back to the temple, and the devotees would use the artwork to enhance the temple or make, you know, displays and stuff like that. And then the devotee said, Prabhupada, they throw the books away. And Prabhupada says, well, they're throwing their children away. You know, this is Kali Yuga. We're preaching to animals, you know, manimals. So that was one of my remembrances of Srila Prabhupada about get going, the books would be going out. You know? So, of course, there was a lot less restriction then. You know, the devotees were pretty free to go anywhere in the airport. And then I was there in 1975 in December, and there was a bomb went off in the airport in LaGuardia, or I think it was LaGuardia Airport in New York, and several people were killed. And I brought this up to Ramapad Swami last January, and he didn't remember it, but it was pretty big news because it was a game changer for how devotees would go about distributing books. The security was enhanced. And there was metal detectors, and you had to go through the gates and stuff. But all that wasn't even around back in the up till 1975 in the airports. It was pretty much, you know, you could go where you wanted to go. But then it gets more and more restricted, and then now it's much more, and so devotees have to go through so much austerity. But, because I was going out to the airport there for like 4 years, you know, supplying the devotees with books. We would go out every day, but I'd go out one day and another devotee would go out the other day. But at certain times around Christmas time, we'd had maybe like about maybe 12, 15 devotees doing Sankirtan at O'Hare. One thing is, Srila Prabhupada, devotees might have heard this, that Prabhupada said they should change the name of the airport from O'Hare Airport to O Hare Krishna Airport. So a lot of devotees got inspiration out of that. And he actually, asked Tripurari Maharaj to actually ask the authorities if they would do that. He wasn't joking, and then, you know, he actually asked them, but they just, you know, it remains O'Hare Airport. But anyways, Prabhupada was always trying to preach at every level, at every circumstance, whenever he could, you know. But anyways, do we have any more comments from the devotees? Oh, Mataji. Thanks for getting those notes together for me. That was pretty much most of the class.
Okay. So, sorry I missed it. Yeah, I got late. But I had to ask you, like, since you've been doing so much of service, so the one thing that I always wanted to ask you is, like, what motivates you to, like, continuously do service? Because sometimes the mood starts acting. So what is it that keeps you going? Like, what is it that gives you the inspiration to keep doing the service? And also, like, after all your years of in the Krishna consciousness, what do you think, have you gathered, is the best way to surrender to Krishna?
It's kind of a bad connection, but I think you said, how do I go from day to day?
Yes, what keeps you motivated to, like, continuously do service, something which is not giving you any tangible rewards? I mean, of course, we all know from knowledge that this devotional service is the most selfless form of service that you are doing, which God, if done in the right spirit, he accepts it, and it's fortunate to be getting to do the devotional service. But then the mood start acting, so it is not possible to continuously, even in a job, like when the mood start acting, it is very difficult to keep the discipline going on. So what is it that motivates you to, like, continuously do the service incessantly?
When I first came, devotees were undaunted. They would see things as they were. Krishna's encouraging Arjuna to get off the mental platform and fight. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada said about these devotees that they were going out to the airport, that they were called Dhiravrata, meaning they were unfazed by, you know, the modes of material nature. They could see the modes acting, but, you know, they were on a mission. So they were focused, and it says that those who are irresolute in purpose, their intelligence is many branched. But those who are resolute in purpose, they're focused. So they have that determination. Krishna says that, and I remember Tripurari Swami. It wouldn't faze him in the least if somebody rejected him. He would just bounce off and just turn around and go to the next person. And that's the way the devotees were. They were so determined, so focused, that that's due to the good sadhana and chanting, and anything is possible. So I developed a lot of, became indifferent to whatever, you know, I see around me, you know, because we have this mission. And once a person can appreciate that, it says there's when one knows the truth, he knows there's no greater gain. So we can see how they're situated and how they could be situated if they just, as Prabhupada said, just got a book or just touched the book or took prasadam. It's inconceivable, you know. But I think at one time the Chicago O'Hare Airport was the eighth largest distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books in the world, meaning, you know, just from the airport alone, that we were pumping out so many books, you know. And Prabhupada was very pleased with that. So, but actually, I think Prabhupada, you know, he would just say this sometimes to encourage devotees that he says, well, I'm just going to go back to Vrindavan. You devotees aren't listening to me, you know. And the devotees would say, oh, please don't go. So it was just kind of a transcendental trick Srila Prabhupada was playing, but, you know, to get things done, he said, you know, my spiritual master is pushing me and I'm pushing you. So this is, it's a good push, you know, fight the good fight, you know. So, like, you know, we just kind of have to get off the mental platform and, you know, understand that we have a larger part to play in the whole, you know. I think Prabhupada said that this movement will save the world at the darkest moment. You know. So, have you heard that before?
No.
Yeah, but you know, Prabhupada would always say something, you know, that would kind of blow our minds. You know. Harvey?
Like, what makes it easy to surrender to Krishna?
Well, submissive oral reception. So whatever we hear, it can go in one ear and out the other, or it can go to the heart. And it, Prabhupada would say, he said, be careful what do you say to somebody, because it can go to the heart, you know, it goes to the heart. So be cautious, because people are, you know, they're part and parcel of Krishna, so they're sensitive. And if they're not sensitive, then maybe they're intoxicated and they can't handle their life situation, so they just have to tune it all out, and then they just go further into darkness, you know. But, you know, the last verse in the Bhagavad Gita, wherever there's Krishna and wherever there's Arjuna, the supreme archer, yeah, there will be morality and victory. So, I always remember submissive oral reception, you know.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Does anybody else want to add anything? You want to say something, Prabhu? Okay, I guess Gruntraj, Srimad Bhavatam, Ki Jai.
Okay, Jitendra Prabhu, Ki Jai.
मैंने बोला था इधर करने के लिए नहीं जाना क्लोज करने के लिए